please join us at our Global Flood Seminar in Denver at the Brown Palace. Bob Benyart Live and Real Science Radio are hosting this scientific look at the Genesis Flood of Noah's Day. From 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, November 29th, registration is $20 or $30 for the family. Reserve a seat online at kgov.com, that's kgov.com, or pay at the door or call now 800-8-NYART, that's 800-836-9278. See you there. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Benyart. Fred Williams is on assignment. Boy, that guy gets around. We have back in studio, what an honor to have Spike Bisaris with us of the series, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volumes 1, 2, and soon Volume 3. Spike, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
Thank you for having me.
We talked about the inflation of the universe, the Big Bang, the multiverse a little bit last time. And we thought maybe we could take time to do an overview of the Big Bang. And we discussed where things are really headed toward absurdity.
Yes.
So you've got a quote from a very prestigious scientific journal.
Sure.
That we could start with.
Let's set the context a little bit in case people didn't hear the last episode.
Yeah.
We spent a little time talking about the multiverse and the idea that there's an infinite number of universes out there outside of our own.
This is being proposed.
This is mainstream within cosmology now. This is
Max Tegmark, he has a quote about that they used to...
Cosmologists used to say, I hate it and it's wrong, and now they just say, I hate it.
Right.
So they've been dragged kicking and screaming to the fact that their model predicts, for multiple different reasons, that there's a multiverse. Mm. And before we even start, we should define the term universe, because some listeners are probably already wondering, what are they talking about? How can there be more than one?
Right.
Cosmologists, depending on context now, have redefined the word to mean that which we could ever perceive, even with the best possible telescopes and so on.
It used to be everything that exists.
Right. And now it's been changed to everything that we could perceive. Mm. And so there's all these other potentially things out there, not only that we can't see now, but that we never could see because the universe is expanding and light won't get here from there and that type of thing. Mm. A more conventional multiverse idea would just be that the universe is so big that there's parts of it we could never see because the light could never get here because of the stretching of space. But what we're talking about now is something more radical than that. Not only is it just a bigger universe than we can see, but that there's actually separate universes, an infinite number, in fact, that have been created by the Big Bang, potentially with different laws of physics across all of them.
Or by multiple Big Bangs.
Or multiple Big Bangs, an infinite eternal series of Big Bangs producing a...
Where there's advanced alien races and so on.
And all sorts of crazy stuff, yeah.
Where you work on the railroad and I'm an NHL player.
Okay.
Something bizarre.
You have too many teeth to play in the NHL, though.
Yes.
But that's not fiction if the multiverse is true. Because in a multiverse, there's an infinite number of universes where every possible combination of particles and events and everything has actually been manifested out there somewhere an infinite number of times.
Right.
So there's an infinite number of universes out there where we're in the studio having the same conversation. There's an infinite number where we didn't because your car broke down on the way or my plane got delayed.
I sent you a letter bomb.
Or something.
We got mad at each other.
There's an infinite number where the South won the Civil War.
This is all so absurd, but it's all proposed as very plausible.
Well, they don't like what we're saying, but they don't propose these things directly, but they would admit when put to the test that this is the implication of what they do believe.
Right.
Like Max Tegmark said, the multiverse isn't a theory, it's the implications of a theory. Hmm. So if the Big Bang model in its current form is true, then you do have to accept the multiverse for multiple different reasons. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we were talking about last time, and we mentioned this without really having enough time to go into it, was that the multiverse, taken to its logical conclusion, brings you to absurdity because you wind up denying some fundamental things about science, about reality. Last time we discussed the fact that the Big Bang model really supports the Boltzmann brain idea, which says that the universe isn't even real. It's all an illusion because your brain popped into existence a few seconds ago with false memories and false perceptions of the universe.
Right.
But the model actually says that's infinitely more likely to be true than for the Big Bang to be a real event in history 14 billion years ago.
And for us to have the universe that we perceive.
Exactly.
Right.
But even setting Boltzmann brains aside, even
that's infinitely more likely.
Yes.
And that's what Alan Guth said, who's the father of inflation theory.
Right.
And he's one of the big luminaries this year, 2014. I mean, he's been in 1,000 news reports
right.
because of the latest science news.
Right.
So
listeners who want more information about that, if they haven't heard the previous discussion, can go back to that. But we also did mention briefly multiverse without really delving into the absurdity of that. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about that some more.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe we could lead off. Here's a quote from the Quarterly Journal of the Royal Astronomical Society.
These are big shots, very credible.
And been around for a long time.
Yeah, maybe only the Royal Geological Society is older than these guys over in England.
This is an article, and this is a quote from there. Quote, "It is proposed that our universe was created by life of superior intelligence existing in another physical universe. Intelligent beings, perhaps our own descendants in the far future, might possess not only the knowledge to design, but also the technology to build universes. This explains why the constants of physics have their observed finely tuned values." Now, I believe on the show here, you've talked about fine tuning before.
Oh, yeah, often.
And you have the part of your website, I know.
Yeah, realscienceradio.com/fine-tuning.
So even from a secular perspective, the universe has to be fantastically well fine-tuned for us to be here. Dark energy alone, which is now an essential part of the Big Bang model, has to be finely tuned to 123 decimal places, which is just beyond the realms of miraculous.
Yeah, right.
And that's not the only one by far.
Like, there's only like 10 to the 80th particles in the known universe.
Yeah, so. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So to escape the implications of that now, a lot of cosmologists are actually embracing the multiverse, not only because the Big Bang predicts it, but also because even though they didn't like the idea at first because it's absurd, it allows them to escape the fine-tuning issue. Because, well, and like what I just read here, why is our universe so fine-tuned? Well, that's because the multiverse is true, and a multiverse is an infinite number of universes, which means there's an infinite number of alien planets out there with aliens who have such good technology that they can design other universes, and ours just happens to be one of those that got built by aliens.
Right.
So that's why it looks fine-tuned, because aliens did it.
Right.
Now, is this science or is it science fiction?
It's science fiction, yeah, but it's where atheistic science is bringing us.
Right.
If you want to debate science with an atheist, you're going to end up talking about aliens. You're going to talk about parallel infinite universes. That's where we're at.
Okay, so let's change tack a little bit. Why is the Bible disallowed as a legitimate explanation, an account of history, according to an atheist?
Well, they say that the supernatural is, by definition, not science. Therefore, it's excluded.
Right, exactly. Now, what is the multiverse? There's our universe, which we can see, and there's all these other universes, an infinite number that we can't see, and that by definition are imperceptible to us. What do we call something that's imperceptible? If it's outside of the natural world...
Well, if it's imperceptible, you'd have to believe it by faith.
And if it's outside of the natural...
The super.
Super. Super means above or beyond or outside of. So by definition...
Super multiverse.
By definition, the multiverse is supernatural. A supernatural explanation.
Outside of the universe.
Right.
Wow.
So,
and it may have an intelligent being there may have created us. Notice in that quote from the Royal Astronomical Society, they said intelligent beings. I think they pluralized it. They could have said an intelligent being, but that would just be way too scary.
Right.
Because they'd be back to where they've been running
it's
from.
It's much more comfortable to say unknown aliens than a personal God. Yes,
right.
Absolutely.
Right.
It interests me that here you have atheists demanding supernatural explanations are disallowed. Because as you said, those are outside of science. It's non-scientific.
Right.
Yet here they are, the Big Bang model, in that it requires a multiverse, which we can talk about in a moment,
right.
Winds up requiring a supernatural explanation. So the Big Bang ultimately is a self-contradictory model because it's founded on a denial of a supernatural explanation while requiring one.
Mm. Wow.
So that doesn't work.
Can we talk about an overview of the Big Bang itself?
Yes. In the beginning, there was nothing. And then nothing exploded. And then there's everything.
That's so funny. Seems like there's so many contradictions in
right.
that single claim.
But so right how there. Can something come from nothing?
Right.
Well, something can come from nothing, and something did come from nothing, which is why there's everything today instead of nothing. See, that's how easy it is.
That's how easy it is.
But if you really unpack all this.
If you're Lawrence Krauss.
Exactly. Although if you read his
book. Or Stephen Hawking. Yeah.
Read his book carefully, though, Lawrence Krauss now. What does he mean by nothing?
He means a quantum
field.
Right, which is not
which
nothing.
Which is not nothing.
Which everyone has pointed out to him, and he's admitted it. He said to the Atlantic, he said, but you're not going to sell books if you say universe from a quantum field. So he says a universe from nothing.
Very nice, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just deception But he really argues a universe from nothing. Then he pretends that the quantum field is nothing. He pretends it.
Right. If not, he's still left with a beginning of something.
Right.
And then he has the same problem he's trying to avoid by invoking quantum field in the first place.
Right.
Because he can't explain how anything can come from nothing, so he has to presuppose a quantum field. But did the quantum field have a beginning? Because if so, you have the same problem. I haven't asked him this, but ultimately you would think he would have to say, well, it's always been there one form or another.
Right.
But the second law of thermodynamics tells us the universe isn't eternal. There is no eternal history, because if that were the case, everything would have reached equilibrium, which it has not. We have not reached maximum entropy yet. So thermodynamics tells us that there's not an eternal universe. There had to have been a beginning. Mm. And if he wants to say, well, there was just quantum field just sitting there for eternity, then it fluctuated. Well, A, why did it fluctuate? B, it also turns out a quantum field gives you the Boltzmann-Brehm problem, which we talked about last time.
So if wildly unlikely things could just pop into existence from nothing, it's way more likely that a brain would pop into existence than the actual universe.
That's the Boltzmann-Brehm problem.
So there's probably an infinite number of brains of you thinking there's a universe out there, but it's all fake memories.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what we talked about last time.
Yeah, it's so, craziness.
So getting something from nothing, though, now we're getting into philosophy rather than science, because what can come from nothing? Well, nothing. Nothing.
Right.
From nothing, nothing comes.
Right.
Nothing can do nothing. Nothing can make nothing.
Right.
It doesn't need a physics degree to really understand that. R.C. Sproul once said, if there ever once was nothing, there could never be anything.
Of course.
Which I thought was a really good way to put it.
Right. And so it's a denial of causality, as you point out mm-hmm. often.
And then there's another issue of we're also violating probably the most fundamental principle in physics, which is the conservation of mass energy. Mm. If you ever take a physics class, in solving almost every problem, one of the first things you do is assume that mass and energy are conserved, that you can't create it or destroy it. The total amount is constant. And then you write an equation applying that idea to the particular problem, and then you solve it and you go mm-hmm. on. But if you think about the Big Bang, that requires everything, all mass energy in the entire universe, to have popped into existence from nothing, leading to the biggest possible violation of this principle.
Right. And to magic. Well, just like Darwinism, where they have all these magic concepts where an organism will survive better if it has a vision system, so it gets a vision system.
Right.
It's just like by magic. So the universe just appears by magic.
Right. But then, okay, so are we going to invoke a violation of physics in order to propose the model, though, which is ultimately what they have to do? Now, if you ask some about this, many of them will tell you, like Stephen Hawking, for example, says, well, nothing produced everything because everything is really nothing. And you can model the universe. Here's what they mean by that. You can model the universe in such a way that you add up all the mass energy and you get a number, let's say X, and then you add up the gravitational energy of the universe and the way the universe is configured, and you can do that in such a way that that is also a number that's negative. It turns out that that value is also X. So if you take positive X and add to it negative X, you get zero. So they would say, well, it would seem to be a violation of physics that the universe popped into existence from nothing, but it's not really, because on a net basis, the universe is nothing.
Hmm.
That there's positive over here, negative over here, cancels itself out. So on a net basis, the Big Bang didn't create anything, so we're fine.
Hmm.
He gives the analogy of when a man digs a hole with a shovel, makes a mound of dirt next to it. You know, there's the mound over here equals the hole over here. You know, add them together and you get nothing again. But there's an important thing that they're not discussing here. And that's that the real universe doesn't work that way. An example I like to give that's a little more concrete. I once worked on a circuit design where one part of the circuit had to provide voltages to the rest of it to power it. And there was two voltages coming out of this section of the circuit. This one wire had plus 40 volts and this one had minus 40 volts. So you could argue that on a net basis, this circuit didn't do anything because added together, you get zero, right?
Right.
But nevertheless, when I pulled the plug out of the wall, that stopped working. Why is that? Because you require an external power source to force zero to diverge into positive and negative numbers.
Wow.
Work has to be done.
Wow.
Not to mention the fact this machine was intelligently designed, needs an intelligent designer to do that. My point is the universe doesn't spontaneously diverge into positive and negative energies. Even in Stephen Hawking's analogy, you needed the man with the shovel to be digging the hole. The hole didn't appear itself. The dirt didn't spontaneously move.
Right.
You needed somebody to interfere with nature and its stasis. And you need an external power source, i.e. the calories he was burning as he dug, to do this. But somehow Mr. Hawking didn't mention any of that in his analogy, and I wonder why.
So a something from nothing, denial of causality, violation of the most fundamental of the laws of physics, that matter nor energy are either created nor destroyed. So if you are denying all these foundational scientific and logical constants, practically claims, observations, then anything goes. And we've reached a time in cosmology where increasingly anything goes.
Well, if your model says that we have to ignore some fundamental physics in order to have a model, then you don't have a good model. I mean, that you would hope would be plain.
Right.
And even taking it further, the actual implications of the model itself, we don't see in the real universe either. The Big Bang model makes several predictions, one of which you've mentioned previously is antimatter, that the universe should be filled with an equal amount of antimatter as it has normal matter, but we don't see that. That's a major prediction of the Big Bang that's failed. There's others as well. The horizon problem is an issue where distant parts of the universe are too close in temperature, according to the Big Bang model. The flatness problem, where the curvature of the universe appears to be flat as close as we can measure, and the Big Bang model says it shouldn't be. It should be wildly positive or wildly negative, but it shouldn't be flat. And the magnetic monopole problem, which says the universe should be filled with particles that are magnetic with only one pole. And they've been looking for those and haven't found any. So the Big Bang made several major predictions here that have failed. Now, antimatter is still out there as an unsolved problem. The other three you don't hear about much anymore because they believe they've solved them with a concept called inflation. Inflation is the idea that right after the Big Bang, the universe blew up in size, inflated, much, much faster than the speed of light for a very short period of time. And for various reasons that we don't need to get into, that eliminates those last three problems I mentioned, the monopoles, the horizon, and flatness. But the issue is, okay, so inflation solves your problem for you, but what is inflation? Is inflation something we know about? They'll tell you, well, the inflation is driven by a particle called the inflaton. But what's an inflaton? Have you ever seen one? Well, no. Is there any room for an inflaton within known particle physics? Well, no. Why do we propose that such things exist then? Well, because without the inflaton, there's no inflation, and the Big Bang model is therefore disproven by the evidence.
So we need the inflaton. And inflation, when the Big Bang occurred, then it's expanding, the universe is expanding, space is expanding at a phenomenal rate, but then suddenly, instantly, the expansion increases in its speed to dramatically beyond the speed of light, and then just as instantly it stops the inflation period.
Yes, and it's still expanding afterward, but a much, much, much slower rate.
Right. The inflation period stops suddenly.
Right.
If it would have gone on for, I don't know the exact numbers, but if it went gone on for another thousandth of a second, maybe the universe would be a million times larger than it is. So even the inflation period, if it were true, seems to be wildly fine-tuned, but I don't believe there was a Big Bang or an inflation period. But the physics of what would start the inflation period, what would stop it, the graceful exit problem.
Yeah, and this is the second half of it. Number one, you have no reason to start it because that's not within known physics. But number two, they've realized once it starts, you can't stop. It continues forever. Not in this universe, but it starts creating other what they call bubble universes from that. And now we're tying back to the multiverse idea. And this is why I said earlier that today's Big Bang model requires the multiverse to be true. Because if today's Big Bang model is based on inflation, because without inflation, you get those three major problems I mentioned earlier. Well, inflation says the universe blew up at a much faster than speed of light inflationary period. Well, the thing is, quantum mechanics says this volume of the universe cannot stop. All the particles within it are not going to fall below the inflationary energy level all simultaneously. Quantum uncertainty means that a few of them will remain above that level even while the rest drop below. So even though that volume of space stops inflating, there are still points within it that are still inflating. And because inflation is just instantaneous.
And if an infinitesimal speck inflates instantaneously,
it immediately produces
create
an entire new bubble, quote unquote, bubble universe.
A new bubble universe.
Which itself will then stop inflating, but not completely. It too has points that'll continue inflating. And so you're spawning an infinite number of bubble universes throughout history.
Right.
So this is now where the Big Bang model is wound up. Now, I've got to make it clear. The original Big Bang model didn't have this because they didn't realize at first that that's what inflation would do. But as they've dealt with the implications, now they've realized if you're going to accept inflation, which if you don't, the Big Bang model is disproved by the evidence.
Well, inflation came about by Alan Guth, we said in the last show, I think in 1980
around there, yeah.
And the Big Bang itself had been around for a few decades before that.
Yes.
So inflation was conceived to solve problems.
Yes.
And the horizon problem.
And the flatness problem and monopoles, yes.
It being these fundamental problems that when you look at the universe, then they recognize, hey, the Big Bang can't be true. And so then you come up with secondary assumptions, rescue devices, radical rescue devices. But Spike, one of the things I've been doing is when we look at the predictions of the Big Bang that have turned out to be false, and there have been big ones, and we've mentioned the antimatter problem, which is enormous. But there are these significant predictions of the Big Bang that turned out to be false. But then there's the failures to predict. That's a different kind of failure of the theory. For example, if dark matter and dark energy really do exist, if 96% of the universe is made out of this non-baryonic stuff, that's another failure of the Big Bang theory to predict that, and which points out that these are simply secondary assumptions, but they're massive secondary assumptions. The inflation period is a failure of the Big Bang. If the Big Bang model actually was a valid theoretical construct for how the universe came into existence, oh, but it did not foresee dark matter, didn't foresee dark energy, it didn't foresee inflation, and so many other things. These are all after-the-fact adjustments.
In fairness, I would say each of those three, dark matter, dark energy, inflation, I would say there's a little bit different motive for each of those. Inflation was a direct attempt to solve Big Bang problems. It's mm-hmm. driven only by a need to maintain the Big Bang as a viable model.
Right.
Dark energy is a result of an interpretation required by the Big Bang model.
For supernova observations, yes. Of the universe.
So certain observations we made, when viewed through a Big Bang interpretation, requires dark energy. So that's not invented to save the Big Bang. That's required by the Big Bang interpreting observations. That is observation-based. And dark matter, I would say, is actually more observation-based. This goes back to, if I remember correctly, the 30s. It wasn't accepted at first for various reasons. But that touches on the Big Bang model in that once they decided dark matter was something that might be real, then they tried to use it to solve other Big Bang problems. But that wasn't their original motivation.
So the dark matter, there's allegedly two kinds of dark matter, baryonic and non-baryonic. And the spiral galaxies, the fact that the arms are moving way too fast for a Big Bang model to account for the spiral galaxies, the further you go from the center of the bulge of a spiral galaxy, the slower the arms should be moving. But they're not. At a certain point, they're moving at consistent speeds. So they thought, well, there's got to be a lot more matter in there. And they figured out from Big Bang nucleosynthesis that the amount of matter we have with protons and neutrons, well, there's got to be twice as much as there is that we can see in the stars and the galaxies. But that's not enough. So we need another 80% non-baryonic dark matter. And that, I think, is because Big Bang nucleosynthesis could only make so much baryonic matter. So then they said, well, there must be dark matter. Well, how was it manufactured? What is it? These seem to me to be wild secondary assumptions and rescue devices in different ways, though.
I would disagree partly with that, applying that to dark matter. Inflation, certainly, it was explicitly concocted just to solve Big Bang problems. Dark energy, like I said, is the result of a Big Bang interpretation, not a need to solve a specific problem per se. Dark matter, if I remember correctly, wasn't even initially based on stars within galaxies. I think it was based on galaxy clusters. I'm not sure about that.
And that would make sense. It's a similar kind of problem. Why are these galaxies clustering? There's not enough matter to pull them together.
It was originally called the missing mass problem, and so that's how I like to refer to it, because it appears, if our understanding of gravity on these scales is correct, that there's mass we can't see. Now, notice that disclaimer. There are people trying to solve this problem by changing our understanding of gravity on large scales. The one particular effort called MOND, Multiplied Orbital Newtonian Dynamics, actually solves certain problems better than dark matter does, but it fails in other things where dark matter is quote-unquote better. Hmm. Point is, there's other ways of looking at this than only saying dark matter and non-baryonic dark matter, as you said. So there's observations that they're grappling with for the missing mass. Dark matter has been adopted as the preferred interpretation, partially because of a Big Bang issue. But I like to talk about this, touching on something you raised, in that it winds up that if you add up normal matter, so-called dark, cold dark matter, and dark energy, that to get 100% of everything – normal matter is only 4 to 5%. So everything we see in the cosmos, stars, galaxies, planets,
yeah,
that all together only represents 4 to 5%. Now, I like to ask the question, the Big Bang Theory is supposed to be a theory of everything. It's supposed to explain the universe and that the universe is everything that there is. So dark matter and dark energy are 96%, allegedly, of the universe. The Big Bang doesn't account for any of those. Has no explanation for what they are or how this stuff was formed. Well, if your theory of everything only accounts for 4 to 5% of everything, do you really have a theory of everything? I mean, I would argue no.
Well, and that reminds me of Stephen Hawking in his Brief History of Time, was it? Where he says basically that this theory explains all the data.
Except.
Except then he gives a list of four exceptions, and the fourth one is how stars and galaxies formed. It's like, well, that's like part of everything, isn't it?
Right. And maybe we should conclude our last couple of minutes here by bringing things back around to how we started. Mm. We talked about how inflation was necessary to solve Big Bang problems and how inflation gives you a multiverse. And then we talked about how, what does a multiverse give you? A multiverse gives you infinite universes where anything is possible, and anything that's possible is out there somewhere. And so you wind up with saying, well, it's possible that there are aliens who run computer simulations of universes, and we run in a computer simulation. Our universe is a computer simulation, right, running on an alien computer. You can't disprove that if you believe in the Big Bang. Mm. That's consistent with the Big Bang model, ultimately, because it's consistent with the multiverse, which is driven by inflation, which is driven by the Big Bang model.
Wow.
And think of any other thing. Well, did aliens build our universe? I believe that's the quote I began with. Mm. Or computer simulations. Or maybe there's an alien out there with running a computer simulation of a universe that contains aliens running computer simulations of universes. So it's two levels up.
Right.
And if you have two, why can't you have three? Or four or five, it's an infinite regress, you wind up in complete absurdity.
I used to use IBM's VM, virtual machine. Maybe the universe is just a VM, it's just a virtual machine inside of a virtual machine.
Sure.
That's what you need system administrators for.
In an infinite multiverse, that's going to be out there somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So whereas the Bible says that it is the fool that says there is no God, and the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, the respect for God, and recognition that without God, we're destined for destruction. And so, Spike, thank you for helping us step back and look at the big picture regarding the Big Bang.
Thank you for having me.
Really enjoyable. Spike Basaris, his two videos, which we stock in our store at Real Science Radio, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Volume 1 is our created solar system. Volume 2, Our Created Stars and Galaxies. And I can't wait for next year, 2015, Lord willing, for Volume 3 on the Big Bang. So this is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. Our website, realscienceradio.com, or the shortcut, rsr.org. You click on the store, you can get Spike's videos and our recent video on the global flood. And if you'd like, you can help us by making a donation, one time or monthly. May God bless you.